Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're about to listen to a brand new episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast, and a podcast that we've been doing in various forms since about 2013. If you want to support the show and keep the lights on here, what you can do is go to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the show. At the $5 a month tier, you also get bonus content every week, including this week's episode, where we talk about Joe Branton and Wesley Snipes. Think about that. patreon.com/guitar nerds. Welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Hello.
Oh, the boys are back in town.
Yes. Aren't they just? It's the greatest song of all time. I'm pretty convinced.
I was trying to get you boys to sing along.
Oh, sorry.
G everyone up. So it's the first real show back after NAMM. Obviously, nothing happened last week. So
what? I think that was my best hosting effort.
I mean, looking at the numbers, the old DL figures, people were seriously put off by the...
That's not true.
They were seriously dissuaded from listening.
My D figures were excellent.
Your D was very small last week. So, we're all finally back in and ready to podcast. I had an extra week off after NAMM, in which I went to Seattle and Portland. Lovely part of the country that I'd not been to before. Anyone else been to the Northwest?
Cool story.
No.
Absolutely not.
No, I really liked it.
It's real good. I saw a couple of Guitar Nerds worthy things. I went to Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar.
Oh, yeah?
Which was... incredible. Like, if you were going to design a guitar shop, it would be that. Loads of like mid-century furniture, so like 50s and 60s furniture kicking around. Loads of really old guitars, so an actual 52 Tele, which was very nice.
Ooh,
it was a lot of money.
I can't
remember exactly how much. 32 grand, something like that. $32,000.
Blimey.
Loads of old Gretsch, old Gibson. I also went to, in Portland, Old Town Music.
Uh-huh.
Which is a bit of a favourite of Blake from the Tone Mob podcast.
The Tone Mob.
Indeed. And that shop was really good as well. Bit more of a mix because... So Mike and Mike's is very much kind of vintage and custom shop stuff. The Old Town Music had way more like... First, it had some cheaper old stuff. So it had like a lot of old Dan Electros, like old weird Guild and things like that. But it also had like 80s and 90s stuff.
Right.
And not necessarily just like... cool stuff. It had like Charvels and stuff like that, but it had some cool stuff that I hadn't seen before, like an Epiphone amp, which I think was from like the 70s.
Oh yeah,
60s or 70s, and it was massive, probably the biggest 212 I've ever seen. Like, I would say almost as wide as an Ampeg 810 on its side, but it was a 212 cab with an Epiphone head. Like, I couldn't work out whether it was valve or solid state. Blake might be able to fill us in if he's been into the shop recently. But mad stuff. And loads of also just stuff that you never, ever see in the UK. Like, just good old vintage stuff. It was cool.
Oh, swag.
And so just you talking about that telly there made me think about... I don't know if you listened to last week's podcast.
No, of course not.
He did.
I was on holiday.
Edit it.
Didn't think so. We talked
if
about.
I'm
going
to have a week away from Joe Branton. I'm not going to listen to the podcast.
Fair enough.
You did listen to a bit of it because you specifically chastised me for saying that you were the most boring man in the world.
Yeah, I know. I'll cut that bit out.
I went to Guitar Center on Sunset Boulevard, and one of the things that became very apparent whilst we were walking around there was there were not really any old tellies. So there were no 52s or anything like that.
Right, okay, weird.
It was very weird. And as we walked out, one of the guys that I was with joked, oh, I wonder if it's just that John Five buys them all. And as I walked out, it was a bit of a funny joke, but I think maybe he's right.
Yeah.
Maybe John Five does just, they just have a hotline to, like, you know, they pick up the phone and you know how you have to dial 9 for an outside line? I reckon they have to dial 5 and it just goes straight through to him.
Oh, is that John?
Yeah, yeah, John, I got enough on, mate. Yeah, okay, yeah, I'll send it straight over.
He's got them all.
At Download, like 2012 or 13, I went there with Total Guitar and I got to, well, they were interviewing.
Did you meet Jonathan Five?
Yeah, I was doing the sound for like Total Guitar magazine whilst they were doing all their interviews.
His full name is actually Jonathan 15.
Okay, right.
And he was bloody
brilliant.
He's
actually Power Man 5000.
He was such a cool dude. So the thing was, they were like talking about guitars with everyone, and John Five, for all his theatrics, was definitely like the most down to earth, but also like the most willing and eager to talk about it. He was so excited.
He loves guitars.
He's great. Yeah. He's really great. Brilliant. It's really funny. Whenever I scroll through Instagram and see a picture of a telly, it always says, oh, John Five's like this. He's obviously doing exactly what we do. You go sit
that means
in the toilet.
You follow John Five?
Of course I follow John Five. He's really cool.
He's so cool. He has a great taste in guitars.
He just buys tellies all
the
time.
I love that he makes a Telecaster like work in whatever genre that, you know, he's involved in.
Metal, jazz,
yeah, exactly,
classical.
Which is great. Chicken picking is kind of his thing.
Which
I
is
love
why
the
Telecaster is the best guitar of all time.
Of course. But I love, and it does occasionally get some flack, I love that he went for that original like 3x3 headstock on his first signature model.
Oh yeah,
that
it was like the hockey stick,
man,
but without the hockey stick.
I loved
bit.
It.
Yeah,
I loved
it was a
that
massive
headstock.
It was so cool. It was so great. But my point was, at Download, when they were interviewing John Five, the last question they were asking everyone that they interviewed was like, oh, what's the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you on stage? And it was sort of going around the room, and like Lee Mallier was there, and I think, you know, Lee Mallier was like, I think he just got his Epiphone Les Paul signature at the time, and they asked him what his most embarrassing story was. And he was like, oh yeah, I once broke a string on stage, like before a solo where I had to play that string. And
not
so
very,
I,
not
I
very embarrassing, is it?
No, it was kind of a bit standard. And then like there was,
I think, yeah, I know what John Fives is.
Thy Art Is Murder, and he was like, yeah, there was one of my guitar cut out like halfway through a song. Like this was sort of, this was the grade of like the metal stars' most embarrassing moments. It was really mundane, like the whole thing was mundane. And then John Five was there, and he was like, John Five was like, yeah, one time I was playing a gig with Rob Zombie, and I was wearing a see-through like a clear rubber onesie, and I'd taken a load of really bad drugs, and I pooed myself during the show, and so I was trying to keep my back turned to the audience for the whole time because it was all just seeping down. It was just like the most graphic story for him to deliver. Like everyone else had just been so safe and tame with their stories, and he just went all in and just told like four guys that he'd never met about this horrendous time.
I think there was a similar story I remember reading about Michael Schenker. But he had a similar problem, except what he was wearing was incredibly tight leather trousers. So he played the entire gig while it just like vacuum sealed in.
Oh,
and then,
at least these
then
all
just creeped off stage at the end.
At least these are all wipe clean solutions. If you've just been wearing jeans, things get a little bit more complicated. Anyway,
and John Five.
Yeah,
yeah.
John Five played guitar on Bat of Hell 3, The Monster Is Loose.
Oh, I love that record. I didn't know that. I really like that album. I mean, I like all three Bat Out of Hells, but 3 was especially good.
He, according to Wikipedia, he maybe only played on the title track, The Monster Is Loose.
Oh, okay.
But that's mad. How about that?
It was a good album, actually. I mean, it wasn't as good as... Was it Bat Out of Hell 1 or 2 that has the Stratocaster or Telecaster story? Do you remember that one?
I don't know
where he's like... he's telling a story about the guitar that possesses him to kill his parents, and he's like,
I don't know enough about Meatloaf.
No, it finishes. It's a monologue. It's just a monologue, and he's like, I can't remember if it was a Telecaster or a Stratocaster, but I remember it had a voice like an angel, and it sung to me. And he has this bit at the end where he's like, and I took the guitar into my parents' bedroom. And I raised the guitar above my head, and just before I brought it down upon my father's head, my father woke and screamed, "Stop! Stop, boy! What the hell are you doing? That's no way to treat an expensive musical instrument." And then there's a solo.
Well, there we go.
I'm so happy we all witnessed that. I'm very, very glad.
It was a great record.
As you can tell, we're all in fine form. I'm really happy to be back. I was thinking about it like on the way home from work today. I was like, I really can't wait to podcast today. And turns out it's not been a disappointment so far.
No. So there's still, about 47 minutes left to go. You know, I'm sure Joe will say something inappropriate in a
minute. Indeed, problematic. So a couple of things to go over. First off, like I mentioned, it is a question special. We thought so much time away. And because we've not been doing regular podcasts for a little while, it was time to answer some of your questions directly from the old Facebook group. So we've got a whole bunch of questions. But the big news is, while we were at NAMM, one of the podcasts we put out was episode 150, which should have been the Guitar quiz. Nerds quiz.
Oh.
So next week, I didn't want to do it this week because I feel like we need one episode to, you know, notify people.
Wait, do I need to write it?
Did you win the last one?
No.
I think Nightsy. I won the last one.
No, I definitely didn't. I had the worst.
I think I won
had
the last
a bad
one.
Day no, I and then had to do the quiz.
I think Packham won it.
I think I won it.
Did I write it?
I hosted it.
Joe hosted the last one.
I think
one.
I won it. Because I've had it in my head. I've written down...
All right, the listeners will have to
know.
Yeah,
no one needs to know about this.
Someone let us know in the Facebook group who won the last quiz. Because the one thing I'm not going to do is go back and listen to the episode. Of course not.
I mean, you could just listen to the last 5 minutes.
Maybe.
Should we listen to it now? Should I get it?
No, don't do that. So next week is going to be the quiz.
Podcastception.
I'm going to try and... if it is me, I'll write it. Jay, if it's you, obviously find some time to write the quiz.
Or what?
Well, you're off the podcast forever.
Where are you going to record it?
At your house still.
Okay, right, okay.
We'll have nice dinner with you and then you have to go away and then we'll record the podcast. Right.
I have to go and sit in the other room with Maddie.
So next week is the quiz, always a highlight in the old podcast calendar. I thought I'd give everyone a bit of notice that next week, you know, is going to be a good episode. Not sure about this week, we'll see. So with that, it's time to go into...
Questions.
Oh god, it's good to be back. Time.
I do kind of feel like we're missing a trick here by not giving Joe two microphones and stereo panning him. Just him. The rest of us can stay in the center channel.
I think podcasts can only be mono.
Can they?
I think,
that's a shame.
Maybe
I'm sure that's not
next
true.
Week, yeah, maybe not.
I think give Joe... Maybe you and me can share a mic and Joe can have two.
Stereo Brenton.
But I think they should be either side of the room.
What? Stereo Joe.
So I can do like a...
What's that weird thing that's like a thing on YouTube where people talk into a mic?
ASMR.
Don't get Joe started on this.
Why don't we do a Joe one of those?
ASM guitar.
Who really love that sort of thing can listen to Joe whisper quietly into a microphone in full stereo.
Listen to the band Polymath.
Welcome to ASMR.
By Stonefield Basses.
No one wants that. So, first question comes from Connor.
Bonefield Stasis.
Aluminium necks. Pros, cons, and any well-known players use them. Matt Knight, any thoughts?
What's his name? I was completely lost his name. But I was going to say Buzz Aldrin, but that's not right. But King Buzzo from the Melvins.
He's the obvious one, isn't he, I think?
He is the obvious one for Buzz Aldrin. Aluminium necks. Buzz Aldrin.
There's a band that I'm good friends with as well called Mutiny on the Bounty, a band from Luxembourg who play electric guitar company aluminium neck guitars.
Has anyone had a chance to try an aluminium neck guitar?
Yeah, I went on tour with them.
Okay, what was the verdict?
Yeah, I mean, they do feel unusual because I think there's a warmth and a sort of homeliness to wood on a neck that you sort of lose. It's a bit more functional. It's a bit more like a tool. With the aluminium neck, stop giggling. I it was less of a disadvantage than I expected.
Matt, any thoughts?
I think the thing is overall, you tend to get a guitar. Well, actually, if you buy an EGC guitar, you can get wood bodies with aluminium necks vice versa as well, but they do tend to be heavier. But I think you get a very different sustain, a very different sound, but I think you're very limited into the guitars that you can get. In fact, the only guitar I have tried with a, I don't know if it was aluminium, but a metal neck was that weird Vox guitar we had in for repair once that was the organ one that was a hollow aluminium neck that had like 300 wires running in the.
Do you know the story behind that? Because I covered this a bit for a video that we did for Guitar Nerds where, basically each fret and each string on the neck has got a separate wire connected to it. So it is called, the Vox organ. I can't remember, there's a model name, but it's the Vox organ guitar. So each fret and each string has got a wire connected to it inside the neck. And it works on resistance, basically. So the lower down you are on the fret, is a lower resistance or a higher resistance? Lower resistance, so it produces a lower note. So what you're actually hearing is not, when you've got the organ sound triggered on the guitar, it's not like you strumming, but it's where you're placing the string and then hitting the string. Right. Where you're placing your finger and then hitting the string. So sort of like how a modern guitar synth works, but it's working by the fret coming into contact with the string and that providing the resistance and telling the guitar what note to play.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I do remember that video, and I didn't understand it then.
No, neither did I. In fact, I understood so little about it that in that video, I just pulled a quote from an article that did know what they were talking about and just read that out and then didn't even accompany it with pictures. I just put the text from the article there.
I'm into a couple of guitar players that use aluminium guitars, and I've never had a chance to have a go on one properly.
Yeah.
I seem to remember a couple coming through the shop at one time or another, and I played both the chords I know, and it sounded really good and really resonant. But Steve Albini, obviously legendary record producer and guitar player in the band Shellac, uses them and loves them. And Steve Brooks from Torch and Floor, two of my favourite bands, he uses them and swears by them and uses really, really low tuning.
Yeah, exactly.
And it works fantastic. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I've always been super interested, but obviously they are extremely expensive.
Yeah.
There was a Travis Bean in the GC that I was in the other week.
Yeah.
And it was it just looked incredible. Absolutely
mega money.
Incredible. Yeah, it was big money.
Yeah, I mean, to buy a new one, if you buy an EGC, they start at $2,900, which isn't like extreme considering some of the maybe more boutique guitars we saw at NAMM. But I get the feeling, looking at their neck shapes, that they just feel like standard guitar neck shapes that you'd expect on a Gibson or a Fender, but they come in a hollow or a solid finish.
Really?
Oh, really? So
Weird. I don't think I'd want a hollow neck. I think that would seem odd to me. Hmm. I mean, I guess to sum up the pros...
And stepping on it.
Yeah. And, I've crushed it like a Coke can. I guess the pros and cons are obviously the pros would be it's got a certain sound if you want it, but also the setup stability, because it's not like wood, it's not as prone to moving as a wooden neck would be, and warping.
Well, you can get that with companies like Vigier that do the carbon fiber.
Yeah, sure.
They actually state on their website that aluminium expands and contracts way much more than wood when exposed to different temperatures. So you actually have to let an instrument acclimatize to the room temperature for about 30 minutes.
Right, sure, apparently. Sure. But I guess
that could be a potential downside.
I'm sure it's not. It doesn't like bend and bow in the same way that wood does, though. I think that's the difference.
No, unless you've got some sort of ridiculous like million gauge string on it or something that's just bending it over.
Sure.
Apart from that, I think it'd be fine. But I guess in one way, I don't know, I can kind of feel a satin aluminium neck just feeling kind of smooth. Kind of nice.
My problem with them, this is going to sound really stupid, but they're always really cold. And
this is my concern.
It's like my hand feels cold. I'm not into this. Yeah. And I'm sure when they warm up, if you got on stage,
what about outside gigs, though?
I mean, how many outside gigs do you play?
Well, I don't know. We were speaking to a Gear Man dude at NAMM, and he played a gig. He was talking about how well his telly stood up when he had to play a New Year's gig in like -4.
Wow.
and that his telly did a good job.
I'd be like, no, it's too cold.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he realised it was going to be that cold.
I'm having a snow day.
But his telly, like, stood up. Imagine if he'd tried to play a Travis Bean in those conditions. His hand would have stuck to the guitar.
Well, exactly, yeah. Exactly, it'd be like Dumb and Dumber.
Exactly.
Oh, no, I can only play E.
Stuart Tate says, strangest phone call you've ever taken while working in a shop. J. Cross.
Oh, no.
I wish we'd thought about this one before.
We could do a whole Patreon on this.
Yeah, we could.
Strangest phone call I've ever taken whilst working in the shop. What have I done? I've hung up on a few people after telling them that if they swear at me one more time, I'm going to hang up on them.
There's a lot of swearing.
That's always fun because people don't ever expect you to actually hang up on them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to name any names, but I did once hang up on a very famous guitar player because he kept swearing at me.
Really?
Yes.
Billy Sheehan?
It was Billy Sheehan, that's correct. No, it wasn't Billy Sheehan. I hung up on someone really famous because it was only because something was out of stock and they needed it that day, and it wasn't my fault it was out of stock, but he kept being very rude to me, so I hung up on him.
Okay, after the podcast, I'm going to ask you how
and,
you
and
is.
Then called back to apologise.
Oh, nice. That's always nice. That's
awesome. So there we go. Strangest phone call. You're going to have to come back to me. I'm going to have a think.
Okay, so I'll share one while you guys have a think. But once, and this is when I was very early on working in guitar shops, I didn't take the phone call, but I was in the room when someone did. A customer phoned up and said, so I got my son this guitar for Christmas, and it's making a buzzing noise, the salesman said, okay, well, you know, it's probably just like the setup, or it might, you know, it might be an earthing issue or something, but it's probably the setup if it's just buzzing. And the guy went, what? And the salesman said, can you describe it a bit more for me? And he said, well, yeah, it's just, you know, it's at the moment, I've plugged it in and it's just on the floor at the moment. It's making this really loud buzzing sound. And he said, I haven't played it yet. And he said, well, how do you know that it's buzzing then? And he went, well, I took it out of the box, and it came with this funny plug. So I've cut the end of the plug off, and I put on a UK plug. And the salesman said, well, no, the amp should have come with a UK plug. And he said, well, no, we haven't got an amp. The plug that came with it, that's got, you know, two of the same ends on it, I cut that off, and then I wired it to a UK plug, and I put it in the wall, then I put it in the guitar, and like it's just like buzzing, and I haven't touched it. And what he had done was he had taken the jack lead, and he had cut one of the jack ends off, and then he had wired
a 3-pin plug
in there into a 3-pin plug, and then he had plugged it in, and then he had not touched the guitar. Luckily, he'd put it on the ground so that, because he only had a short guitar cable, so he could plug it into the wall, and left it there and hadn't really touched the strings, or maybe he'd like strummed them and nothing had really happened. But yeah, the guitar was buzzing because there was direct power from the wall going straight into the guitar.
Mental.
Yeah.
Do you think that's actually real? Or do you think it's someone?
No idea. It could have been a wind up. It could have been a wind up. But from the tone of the person taking the phone call, it seemed quite real.
And well,
go on, Matty.
Sorry, go on.
No, go on.
No. I had another wind up one just while I thought, while you were talking, I thought of someone else who definitely was a wind up once. And it just made me think of another. I think it was before me, and you might have told me the story in the really early days of mail order. Someone rung up and was like, they were like, you know, hello, you know, how can I help? And they were like, yeah, I'm after a compressor. And they were like, oh, okay, you know, what sort of compressor? He's like, oh, well, it needs to be like really fat. And they were like, okay, well, you know, you could try this one. And they said, no, like really fat. And they were like, oh, okay, well, you know, this, and it's got bass, you know, and I think they were talking about like studio compressor. He went, no, I need one as fat as your mum, and then just hung up the phone.
That's not a good one.
Yeah, that's a classic wind up. It's a classic wind up. Joe Brenton, any thoughts?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
remember, you can't libel anyone. You can't put down any organisation you have currently or have previously worked for.
Yeah. I know.
You can't say any names.
I know. Well, I will.
You can't say any swears.
Yeah, I know. So my weirdest phone call that I've ever received, when I was working in the guitar shop, was from myself.
Okay, go on. Interesting.
So, and it was actually, it was this year. So In early January, we came back to work after New Year's, and I had an email in my inbox from someone at the shop just had a statement in quote marks saying, "I want to play all the guitars," and then like, "Great one, mate," and that was it. And I was like, "I don't know what he's talking about. I'll leave that." And then like a little while later, I had a phone call from Charlie, the girl in basses, and she was like, "Oh, you've really wound up Mike, the other guy in basses, with your phone message the other day." And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about." And so she played it down the phone to me off of the work answer machine, and then later was able to send it through to my extension so I could listen to it. But it would appear that at some point on New Year's on New Year's Eve, I was so inebriated,
yeah,
that I called up the GAK bass department and left a message in a funny voice,
of course,
requesting to play
all of the bases.
But the thing is, I have absolutely zero recollection of it. And whilst the accent is something that I would do, it's not especially a favourite. So it was confusing. I wasn't 100% sure it was me, but it certainly, it sounds like it probably is me.
It definitely sounds like it would be you.
Yeah, it probably is. The problem was, they got that message at 7 p.m.
on
New Year's Eve.
Oh, I see. So they'd only actually just left work.
Yeah, and I don't remember being that drunk at that point, but evidently I must have been.
It doesn't surprise me at all. Doesn't surprise me. J Cross, have you thought of anything yet?
I don't think there's anything that I can talk about on...
I mean, there's plenty that I can't talk about.
Well, completely.
And if we ever do a live show that isn't recorded for a podcast, I'd be more than willing to talk about these
sort of things. No, a lot of the questions that a lot of the phone calls that we get were just boring. So,
oh, hello there.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a whole. You want to talk about 40 bottle tops, and we can talk about that off air. But you know, no, let's. I'm not willing to. I'm not willing to risk.
Let's move
risk
on.
My comfortable existence right now.
I think that's a good thing. Robin says, so Nam and Strymon and Empress... So Nam saw Strymon and Empress release Eurorack stuff. And recently, big Eurorack synth guys have been releasing guitar to Eurorack converter units. Are we going to see guitarists with walls of effects all hooking up with Wii cables like a synth player of old? Matt Knight.
Well, while everyone else was hungover and busy, I went to the Modular Synth Zone on Sunday to check out all the modular synthesizers, because modular synthesizers are amazing. And actually, one company did do such a thing. Pittsburgh Modular made the Patchbox Enclosure, which was a three-button pedal board with a Eurorack power unit, and then all the extra CV ins and outs on top. Surprisingly, didn't sell very well. So they discontinued it. And actually, you can plug your guitar into Eurorack stuff, but the line level is like plus 20. It's really hot, so you can't just plug a guitar into it. You actually have to get a special like interface just to be able to get your guitar up to the line level you need. But to be honest, spending a lot of time on my mate's studio, he does a lot of sound design stuff with Eurorack. You just don't need to plug a guitar in. You can do it. You can do so much from Eurorack and different modules. A guitar is like a pointless controller. You don't really even need a keyboard, because certain modules can just do everything for you. I think you might see some guitar players plug more stuff in, but I think what you're seeing now in the Eurorack world will start becoming pedal ideas that guitarists can use, rather than actually like guitar players plugging into Eurorack gear.
I think people really,
modular guys are creating stuff that are unbelievable, stuff that I've never seen traditional guitar effects do.
I think people realise that as well. Like, I don't think these companies are expecting to sell... Like, Strymon are not expecting to sell a load of Eurorack stuff to guitar players. The people I think they're expecting it to sell to are, like, studio guys who, like, might play a bit of guitar, so know the Strymon name, and, you know, want to get some Strymon stuff for the studio. But it's also more about, like you say, how can they create some new ideas that then become guitar pedals, I think.
I think, yeah, and I think the thing is the community around Eurorack is massive. I think, and the thing is, there's potential in this market that we're not reaching right now, and we've got the production team to be able to build them more affordably and build them, in bigger amounts. So the ZVEX have done the Fuzz Factory recently. I think they did a couple of their other ones. I think there was Strymon, maybe JHS. There's loads of companies like building into Eurorack stuff now. But yeah, hopefully what you'll start seeing is a lot of the Eurorack things I was seeing being ported into guitar pedals, like granular synthesizers with like proper displays and being able to patch stuff internally. Actually, there was a set of Roland Eurorack stuff, digital ones, that are now discontinued, that had an iPad editor that you could then virtually add your own modules in and create an Eurorack system on your iPad and then plug your guitar into that because it had a general guitar jack in. We were like, should totally make this into a guitar pedal. So I've got one in the office at the moment. It's really cool. That's the Demora. So if you wanted to mess around with Eurorack and the guitar, and find a discontinued Roland Demora, delay pedal. You want to go down that route.
Sounds bonkers. Joey B, Levi has got a question for you. He says, best bass fuzz? ?
Oh, it is tricky. There's a lot of very, very good stuff around. Well, actually, bass fuzz is very tricky to do. I think at the moment, for me, the Electro Faustus Guitar Disruptor.
So you've gone in for like a real general purpose one right there.
Yeah, it's a real, but I'm really, it depends what you want from a fuzz, if you want traditional or modern. This is the Electro Faustus is a super gated, really, really modern sort of Fuzz Factory style fuzz, but I think it's absolutely fantastic, and they're very, very affordable. I think they might be just under the 100 British pound mark, which
pretty
is
impressive, isn't it?
Which is pretty good, yeah. I mean, if you consider like the next one I'd probably be looking at is the ZVEX Fat Fuzz Face, which is £200 plus. However, if you're looking for anything affordable at the moment, we mentioned this on the podcast, maybe we actually mentioned this on the Patreon episode last week, but Ashdown and Dr. Green, which is the name of their pedal range, they're actually abandoning their pedal range. So they're
are they?
Yeah, well, I think they're replacing it or moving it or whatever. Okay. Anyway, they're getting rid of old stock, as the line seems to have been have had limited success. And the I always thought the fuzz was probably the best thing out of their range, which was the Bearded Lady. The Dr. Green Bearded Lady, they're now selling for around £30.
I mean, that is really cheap.
They were like £130 when they came out. They also did another one which was called the Hairy Tongue, and I think that is actually going for the same sort of money. So if you want like a cool a boutique style vintage fuzz, then I think absolutely snap up those Dr. Green deals at the moment. Like, it just, for £30, it's the price of a Behringer pedal. These are way, way better than that. I know they weren't popular, and that's, I think, simply that competition is so high at the moment for these sort of boutique style pedals. But yeah, absolutely, check those out.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Well, and also a bit of competition, I guess, at their original price. You know, you've got to be looking at the Electromonic stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they've reissued, what, four different Big Muffs in, yeah, like, or not even reissued, but, like, you know, done some kind of modded stuff. I mean, the Russian Big Muff, which is now in nano form,
yeah,
I think you can't beat for bass. It's one of the best bass sounds ever.
I completely agree. I'm so glad that that pedal's come back.
Yeah.
It's
And there's also a Way Huge one as well.
Oh, there is as well.
Oh,
yeah.
The Swollen Pickle.
No, green. It's called the Green Russian, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking for something on a budget, you can't go wrong with that Electro-Harmonics fuzz. I mean, whether it fulfills the criteria of best bass fuzz is subjective, but I just think for value for money, obviously those Dr. Green ones are incredible value for money at the moment, but when they're gone, probably the next thing is, you know, a little Big Muff of some... Not the little Big Muff, that's a bad sounding pedal.
Yeah.
But one of the smaller Big Muffs, I think, is where you're going to go.
There was actually another fuzz that I think works really well on bass if you want to go down like the super boutique line. Matt, I'm going to need your help with the name. There were those massive sort of rust finished pedals that we had a Butcher's at.
The Medor Electronics. Medor.
M-E-D-O-R. Yeah, we were never sure on the pronunciation. Where were they from? New Zealand? Australia?
Australia,
yeah. Really super cool. Again, like, if you're into supercated fuzz, like, it's not a traditional fuzz. And of course, answering this question, fuzz can never really be a general thing because the modern and vintage style of fuzz are so totally different, almost different effects. And if you like one, you don't like the other, generally speaking.
I mean, also, even vintage fuzz, even vintage-y fuzz from one brand... The difference between a regular Big Muff and the Russian Big Muff and the op-amp Big Muff.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so much variety on fuzz and bass slightly less so for guitar. But then again, a lot of kind of guitar pedals cross over, you know, on bass. So.
Absolutely.
Actually, just quickly on that brand, we should mention he also sent us the modified metal zone that he does, which he calls the Fuzz Zone.
Oh yeah.
Which is basically completely redesigned the circuit of a metal zone, and it does everywhere from like a clean boost to like a synth fuzz with a controllable pitch oscillation.
Oh,
but like all from one metal zone. It's just got one extra switch and one extra control on it. It's absolutely amazing.
Why have I not seen this pedal yet?
Because it's at my house and you never come to my house.
That is true. I don't want to go there because it's up that London, isn't it? Don't like going up that London.
You don't like that London.
Chili says, what's the difference between the drive channel of a solid state amp and a traditional stomp box drive pedal? Why does a solid state amp drive always sound so much worse than a simple drive pedal? Aren't they similar? Matt Knight, any thoughts?
I read this question earlier and I was like,
this is a fantastic question.
I'm sure there's a really easy technical answer for this. And I'm like, I don't really know how to explain it. I guess in a way they do really work on the same thing, but a lot of the kind of, I guess a lot of the like solid state drives that people remember hearing are from really old like 80s transistor amps, which generally don't sound very good.
Yeah,
I mean, people are remembering the Jazz Chorus drive here.
They're also remembering the drive on the Jazz Chorus, which is one of the worst drives of all time.
But I mean, anything, you know, you think about like, you know, old PV amps and things that even we rave about, like the PV Bandit. The drive channel on that is not a good sounding drive, and I think it is just that, you know, it was a function added to an amp when, you know, people didn't really care that much about drives. I just think, you know, you could build an amp now conceivably with a really good drive pedal as the kind of gain circuit.
I guess if you look at the crank amps, I mean, we had a secondhand Crankenstein, which was the Dimebag Darrell signature one. I thought it sounded terrible, but that was his signature drive sound in his amp.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess it is part of it, what you make of it. But a lot of those old 70s and 80s ones, the clean sounds are way better because they've got massive headroom and they're not being, you know, driven by valves. But the drive sounds they've had to put in them just sound terrible.
Well, and I mean, if you're talking about drive pedals in amps, I know that Ryan from 60 Cycle Hum recently has been going on about the Ibanez Tube Screamer amp.
Yeah.
Which I mean, I never really saw the...
Oh, they were so weird.
I never really saw the appeal of them. And I remember, Mark, I remember you being quite into it.
Yeah.
And I just, I thought they didn't sound very good. Maybe
I agree. I don't think they sounded like tube screamers.
But a lot of people really, really... Look, Ryan bought one, and I think since, a couple of other people on the 60 Cycle Hum page have bought them as well and seem to be really into them. I don't know. I never really got it, and I'm with Matt. I think there probably is a very simple explanation as to why it's not the case. But unfortunately, this is guitar nerds, not amp nerds.
Well,
so
I mean,
don't know.
By the same token, I think if you bought a PV Bandit now and put some drive pedals in front of it, probably still wouldn't sound that good. You know, what we're talking about here is, when, you know, most people that are hearing these drive pedals are hearing them through a valve amp. There are definitely certain... certain things that break that rule, like you can put pedals in front of a Katana, not a problem. But most of the time, the thing that makes those amps with a pedal in front sounds good is that they've got a valve output stage. Mm. And that's what makes the difference. So just replacing, you know, like the preamp of a PV Bandit, for example, with the preamp from a nice pedal that you like, it's probably not going to solve the issue. It's because, you know, the output stage actually makes the difference. So, yeah, I mean, that would be my thoughts. But I think mainly it's just that people on old transistor amps didn't really care that much what they actually sounded
like. Well, yeah, I mean, it could be that as well.
I think that's a huge part of it. Andy says, do we spend too much time thinking about gear and not enough time actually playing?
I mean, we are certainly guilty of that, the four of us. However,
no, surely not.
I feel as though we probably have a bit of an excuse in that we do this podcast, so we probably have an excuse. You know who doesn't have an excuse? All the idiots listening to us right now.
Idiots.
None of you people have got an excuse as to why you're thinking about gear instead of playing.
We have to research stuff.
I mean, I've got tons of PlayStation to play. Oh. I've got to look after my cats. Seriously, this year I'm going to try and play more guitar. I'm going to at the least do an album this year, and I might do some gigs. And I'm going to try to be a better guitar player as well.
This thing came to a head for me when I went to GitCon, and as soon as I got there, realised that it was like an event for people who played guitar,
not people who just talk about stuff
like we do. And they were like, yeah.
Did you walk in being all like, hello there, I'm here for bass related queries, and everyone looked at you just like, oh right, great, Brandon's here.
No, but I
couldn't they send that?
What's weird is the amount of people he won over, the amount of people who came up at NAMM who were like GitCon people.
That's just more about them than anything.
They were like, we love this guy.
Yeah,
oh,
I mean, that's
Joe Branton. Oh, he's such a cool guy.
Most of them had to like take me to a hospital at one point or another across the whole week.
I love when he threw up on himself. He crazy guy.
Yeah, I was a crazy guy. But yeah, when I turned up there and there were like these booths for doing the demos, and they were like, yeah, you can just pen off the time you want to go in there and like record a demo. And I was like, I don't really play guitar.
I talk about guitar.
I mean, I'll just film myself. Can I just play a drone note and just do some weird stuff with a delay pedal?
They didn't really have any pedals there. That was the problem. TC were about the only brand there.
That's why you ended up with a bloody tone print. Because it's the only thing you could do.
I was like, Tor, thank God you're here. Someone to talk to.
So, yes. And I think, you know, it was one of my kind of resolutions in January to try and actually play a bit more guitar. So far, it's panned out that in January, I've basically, despite going to NAMM and having loads of, you know, time off, I don't think I've actually picked up a guitar. Certainly in the last two, I didn't play a guitar while we were at NAMM, really. You know, take it off the stand, have a little play, go, oh, that feels really nice. Yeah, excellent, brilliant. Okay, see you later. Because there's no time to plug stuff in or, you know, actually give it a proper demo. The last month, I would say, I've probably played, certainly the last 2 weeks, I've probably played the least guitar I've ever played.
I'm definitely playing more. I have...
I mean, is that because there's a Shell Pink Mustang in your bedroom?
Yeah, partly. Yeah. And I was going to... In all seriousness, yes, because I've now got my offset telly in the living room, and anytime I'm just sat there, like yesterday, I watched two football matches, and through the entire two football matches, which was Newcastle United versus Manchester United and Liverpool versus Southampton, I just played my guitar whole way through, except for when I made dinner. And then just when I went out to bed, up in the bedroom, I've got the Shell Pink Mustang. Played that for like 10 minutes before going and brushing my teeth. Nearly I'm playing guitar. More guitar than ever. And I think I'm doing a gig next month. I think.
Okay.
Exactly. Are you playing guitar or bass? I'm
playing bass in this new band.
Do you remember when we used to do gigs all the time? We always looked at those guys who were in their 30s and we were like, oh, he does one gig a year.
I know.
God, call himself a real musician.
I didn't play a single show last year, and I think I only did one the year before that.
Yeah, I managed one last year and two the year before. Unbelievable. Well, what have we become?
I've played a gig for about 5 years.
No, come on, Matty. We know that you're like the ultimate bedroom
ungiggable
creator,
rig.
The ungiggable rig.
You've got an
rig.
Excuse. You've got an ungiggable rig.
I literally can't get it out of my house. I'm like one of those people that needs a crane to get out to go to hospital. I'm like, no. I need a crane to get my rig out of my room. They have to knock out the external wall just to get the rack
out. And you can't drive. So, I mean, what are you going to do? Take it on the tube? Oh, there isn't even a tube station near your house.
No, there's not.
Just crane it all the way to Bristol.
Does anybody have any ideas for how I can take this ungiggable rig on the main line to East Croydon, please?
Just get the bus.
Just pile it all on. I want to learn how to play guitar a bit better this year. I've signed up for guitar lessons.
Have you?
Yeah, with Chris Webber.
Oh, okay, the Webster.
Guitar tutor. Yeah, Chris...
Fender Play, mate.
I thought about Fender.
Fender Play.
I need someone to teach me, because I need to bypass all the rubbish and just go straight to learning some
Dragon Force
blues guitar licks. Shop licks. Yes, yeah. Some blues licks. Essentially, I want to start playing more guitar on the GAK YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And I'm not a good enough player to do anything other than. Not on guitar, I'm not a good enough player to mess around with anything other than a ton of effects.
Arguably.
Or bass. No, yeah, that's true. So, I signed up to lessons with Chris Webber, who used to work with all of us at GAK and is now a guitar tutor in his own right. He has a massive beard and he loves Slash.
Mate, this is prime Patreon content.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's prime Patreon content. Every week after your lesson, you could come home and you could record half an hour of what you've learned, including playing the guitar.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Are you going to him or is he coming to you?
Well, actually, he is becoming the official guitar tutor for GAK, which is exactly why I'm going to him, because I get it cheap.
Right, okay, that's good. Because what I was going to say
supporting
is...
Supporting your mates.
Keep taking the food out of his mouth.
Thanks.
Chris Webber is a bit of a whiskey connoisseur.
Yes.
So I'm very glad that you're not going to him, because, first of all, you wouldn't get anything done. And second of all, you'd just drink all of his whiskey whilst he went to the bathroom or something, which isn't fair.
You know, whilst we were at NAMM, the cleaners tidied my desk at work and they removed all the booze. From behind my desk. It's not there anymore.
Problematic.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Really? Through a working day.
I don't know. It's been really difficult.
I think, honestly, you should... we can make that into a little Patreon feature.
Okay.
Branton Plays.
Yeah.
Branton
Plays. Yeah, Branton Plays doesn't have a nice ring to it. We need something with a ring.
Joe's Licks.
Joe's Licks. Yeah. There it is. Joe Len's Licks.
Now, if there was only a word that I could use to describe you that rhymes with lick.
Licky Branton.
I don't know where we're going with this. That's horrible. That is horrible. Next up, oh God. Robin says, best bit crushy / lo-fi reverby / vibrato / phase style noise effects. Matt Knight.
Those are just four different effects, like completely. Well,
is there something that does all of that, Matt?
No, but I've kind of got a couple of solutions for cool things that might
cover. I mean, it sounds like you just want something weird.
Earthquaker Devices Transmisser, which we did a little video on the channel, which is really cool. That's their kind of super lo-fi ambient reverb with modulation and a filter.
You can sweep via an expression pedal.
That sounds like it would do some of that.
That's a super cool weird pedal.
There's the... Maleco pedals make the Lo-Fi Echo 616, which is a analog delay with a bit crusher and modulation built in. So it bit crushes all the repeats, which is quite cool. They're only $150, actually. That's a really, really cool little pedal. Or one thing I've actually been thinking about getting, just kind of on maybe like a delay front that's a bit weird and wonderful, that covers some good modulation sounds in there. The way huge Super Puss.
Yes,
analog
what a
delay
pedal.
With tap tempo. And then you've also got four different subdivisions, which you can then send in sequence to get some kind of glitchy delayed repeat with loads of modulation on. Awesome bit of kit.
It's not cheap, and it's not easy to use, and it's also not out yet. But the new Empress FX Zoya, I think, will do basically anything that you ever want with effects.
It's kind of like Alexa, but for guitar effects.
Yeah.
Zoya, can I have a synth sound, please? Sure. Here's the manual. Just program it, and then you know, you'll be there.
It's not quite like Alexa, is it? Because you actually have to pull the manual out and do loads of work.
It's actually, just going back to the question about the Eurorack, basically they have brought Eurorack style programming into multi effects. That's effectively what it is.
Yeah,
I can't wait to try one. It looks absolutely amazing.
Oh my god, guys, this is what we need to do.
What?
Like a Guitar Nerd's Alexa style pedal. We have to make
where people just say what they want, yeah, and then we suddenly make
multi effects.
I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Someone feeds the audio through it.
Do you know how many pedal builders listen to this podcast?
Also, what happens when it's on stage and people are like singing around it?
Well, you obviously
it'll be like when you
press down the button like you have to do with Siri.
Hey Siri, play U2.
Hey Jay, play Reverb Effect.
We're wrecking people's phones right now. Hey Alexa, tell me something about Joe Branton.
Play Digger Digger.
No, don't. Not that. Let's move on. So, Robin, there's probably not one thing that will do all of that, but there's some good examples there. Also, check out the... what was that brand you just mentioned that do the Disruptor?
Electro Faustus.
Do they not do some weird bit crushy stuff?
Most of their stuff is weird bit crushy stuff. I mean, I think if you just want a bit crusher, then the Moor Lo-Fi, I think, is an excellent like entry level into those. If you just want to like try sort of weird bit crushy effects, then it's a really affordable sort of gateway pedal into that sort of area of things. I also think like it does just sound like you want something weird. If you want something weird and you want something affordable, I still stand by the Behringer Ultra Shifter as just such an absolutely bonkers pedal. It's a pitch shifter that doesn't really shift.
It doesn't really work
properly.
Basically.
But it's so good because of that. It becomes such a wonderful lo-fi tool, and it's so affordable and like the sort of thing you can just throw around, and it just the more broken it gets, the better it sounds.
Yeah.
So yeah, cool pedal.
Dave says pros and cons of different nut/saddle materials and bridge pins for acoustics and electrics. Is there a difference noticeable at all? Jay Cross, you are a big fan of the old brass saddles.
I am a huge fan of the old brass saddles. I think that there are certainly pros and cons to brass saddles. The cons are that you can't really intonate them to... Well, you can't intonate them
if you're talking
to the
about
degree...
Like telebrid.
If you're talking about brass saddles, then
But you could put brass saddles on anything.
I suppose. Okay, but yes, brass saddles in terms of what you would expect on a traditional Telecaster bridge, so a 52 Tele, for example. You can't intonate that in the same way that you can... a Strat bridge or something like a Floyd or a Kayla or anything that's designed to be intonated, you know, you will lose that ability. However, I think it's worth the compromise because of the vibe that you get out of the brass saddles, that extra ringiness. It just sounds and feels more like a real guitar to me. Now, I appreciate that the sort of music that I play and the sort of music I'm into isn't going to be... It will tolerate the fact that the guitar might sound a little bit out of tune every now and again because this is hot off the press. I'm not a very good guitar player.
Really?
So, you know, me being a little bit out of tune every now and again isn't going to be the worst thing in the world. I can understand if you're playing in a extremely precision, focused, progressive math band, it matters whether you're in tune or not.
Subtle dig.
Actually, maybe not.
It doesn't.
No, maybe not. In all
no
seriousness,
no one's even listening, so it doesn't matter.
Well,
there's so much vibrato on his bass; it's basically out of tune.
Yeah, that is.
Well, fair enough. But for me, that's worth the compromise. Whether it makes a difference to you is a different matter.
What? How do you feel about a brass nut?
I've never really noticed a huge amount of maybe I've just not used enough brass nuts. I mean, there was a brass nut put on the 2016 Les Paul Standards.
Yep.
And I didn't really notice a huge amount of difference. But then again, that guitar was so radically different that any difference you might have felt from the brass nut was maybe lost by the fact that the tuners were different, or the fretboard was super wide, or whatever. I'm not sure. Brass nut is not something that's ever really appealed to me, to be completely honest with you.
Do you know what? I think that brass nuts are really good, but I would never put them on anything because I think they look very bad.
Right.
And they make a similar difference, actually, to the brass saddles. Just a bit more attack, generally like a bit brighter sounding.
Yeah.
And that is a sound that I like, obviously, on bass. But I could never put one on my bass because it's like putting a gold thing on your bass. You wouldn't do that, would you?
No.
You wouldn't suddenly have like, oh, yeah, I've got like, you know, regular chrome hardware everywhere. Oh, I've got one.
Just change it all to gold.
One brass tuner.
What, on his, like on, his on his cracked sunset tangerine?
I mean, Mark Packham has the worst looking P bass I've ever seen.
You're wrong. It is the absolute best.
It looks terrible.
The best finish ever.
It literally wouldn't matter if you put gold stuff
sunset
on it.
Sunset orange transparent.
Oh, it's horrible.
So good. It had a chrome mirror scratch plate on it at one point and a big M in sparkly letters. It was fantastic.
For Mark.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
My God.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Andy says, I've already asked this, but what stuff from NAMM do you predict will make the final Gear of the Year 2018?
Now, this is a fantastic question.
Oh,
it is.
Fantastic.
This is a fantastic question.
So one thing that you saw that you think might be on Gear of the Year at NAMM, what do we think, J. Cross?
I'm going to be a company person for for just a moment.
You know that no one from Fender's listened this far into the podcast.
I'm going to be a company person.
I don't know if anyone listens this far into the podcast.
Well, yeah. Something that I think is a little bit different, and I think we will see a lot more of, is the new Pro Junior.
Okay.
Because
it sounds great.
It sounds great.
It
sounds great, and it's tweed.
Yeah.
And so basically what Fender has released is a cheap 57 Champ.
Yeah.
Because you've only got volume and tone on it.
Yeah.
And
which is all you need.
Completely. And,
fat switch.
One of the things with the new Hot Rod series is that the fact that the
They're
volume
brilliant.
Control well the fact that the volume controls were borderline unusable previously.
No, surely not.
Has been
addressed.
Reworked and you now have a usable volume control. So the fact that you can use that on a home amp, which bear in mind, the same has been done with the Blues Junior here, and I'm not saying the Blues Junior. I think that new Pro Junior will completely throw a spanner in the works.
Absolutely.
If I was working in a guitar shop and that amp was out on the market now, I don't know what I'd be doing, because I would be losing all my credibility, because all I've ever done is recommend the Blues Junior. But now that Pro Junior, fantastic.
How much are they?
I don't know. Less than a Blues Junior.
Okay. $450, something like that?
£469.
There we go. $450. It sounds pretty good to me.
Really cool. And if you're after a small home amp, I really think it's worth having a look at. I think that's an underrated pick of the... Because Fender released so much stuff at NAMM, and there's still stuff to come out. I think that's going to be a banger.
Cool. Matt Knight, what did you see at NAMM that you think is going to be Gear of the Year 2018?
It's tricky because we didn't play a lot, so I want to like hear more stuff. I'm interested to hear this new tremolo reverb from Music Man, but I did play extensively the St. Vincent HH, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to go on about my own company, but Katana Air I think was a really cool product this year.
That might be the
I
one thing that I buy.
Really? No, rather than the Katana Artist? I mean, that would certainly be...
I mean, not for my living room. I don't need the Katana Artist. No. Can barely fit a Katana 50 in there, let alone a Katana Artist.
But I think the Katana Artist is the... is sort of one of the apps...
Sorry, what you missed there and why Joe stumbled is because he was reaching across the room for a bottle of wine.
And a pint glass.
Couldn't even finish the sentence before he was desperate to grab...
Please.
wine and a pint glass.
Okay, so what the listeners won't have seen is that I've been trying to get a wine top up for about the last half hour, and Mark Packham has been refusing to pass me the bottle, so I had to get Jay to do it.
You've had enough, son. You've had enough.
So yeah, I thought the Katana Artist was an absolutely cracking product. Incredible sounding and amazing for the money. And I think one of the first things we've seen that's going to give the Blues Junior a run for its money is
I've already told you, the Hot Rod Pro Junior.
True. But I think, you know, there's been some... I love the Ormsby Goliath stuff, but I know that it kind of came out last year.
You're saying the Jared Dines isn't going to win Gear of the Year 2018?
whilst it's a great product, and the man is an anus, I don't think it will. But the absolute best thing that came out, I think, and irrefutably will continue to be the best thing of 2018, is the Line 6 HX FX.
Yeah, seemed good.
Absolutely.
Seemed real good.
It didn't just seem good. It seemed like the answer to everything. The Helix has been an incredibly successful product. The only thing that it couldn't maximize on was people who use pedals, people who are into pedals and want to keep their own board with their own pedals. This answers all of those things whilst being the absolute tool. This is
you're the absolute tool.
Why would anyone buy an
I was going to say it.
I saw you perk up.
I decided to let him finish his
why would anyone
sentence?
buy an Eventide H9 now?
Okay.
What, when there's the Eventide H9000 or whatever it's called?
Oh, yeah, you can buy that. Grand. 16 H9s in one.
I just think the HXFX is an absolute game changer. A completely brilliant pedal. I think Line 6 have
finish
owned
the
it.
Sentence before you pour that wine.
Oh, well, I'm done.
Unbelievable. I'm trying to think what I even saw at NAMM. It seems like such a long time ago already, having a week off in between, that I can't actually even remember what I saw. What did I see that I liked?
So let's see. So if it wasn't, did you like the new Guild stuff?
I did. In fact, yes, that may be the winner to this question.
So the only thing to give Guild a run for its money very, very quickly, sorry to interrupt, it was the... what was that French company that we saw that also did a similar style of sort of Fender-esque custom shop? And I can't remember.
Sauvage Guitars Sauvage. And something else, but they weren't really Fendery. They were more like...
somewhere in between.
Yeah, they were like Gibson, like retro slash. Style guitar. I'm sure they were great, but are they Gear of the Year contender? They're probably too custom for that.
Right.
I would say that Guild, actually, what Guild are doing with their reissues, I was very, very impressed with. In fact, they've just launched that hollow body that's a little bit like a Gibson ES-120, which I thought was excellent for the money. Not mega money, it was like 800 quid or something like that, and it was very, very good. So, yeah, Guild, I think this year, will be a kind of quite a player in the Gear of the Year. They're doing a few things, actually, like the S series, and they had that, I forget the name of it, the one that's like a double cut Les Paul kind of vibe, or, you know, like a Epiphone Coronet kind of style, like double cut with a kind of flat, squarish body.
Yeah.
Tons of really good stuff.
What about Cower?
Yeah, Cower again, doing some really nice stuff.
Cower of Love.
Might be too kind of boutique for
a new model this year.
What about the Titans? I think would definitely
Definitely, but I don't know if there was a new model for the show this year, so I don't know.
It was Wild Custom, the name of
Wild Custom guitars. Yeah, really nice. Yeah, really good retro stuff.
What about the Victory amps in a box? The Victory
pedals, the new Chapman stuff. Yeah. You know, the British made stuff. I really want to try because I didn't actually manage to get our hands on it at the show. So yeah, loads and loads of stuff.
Didn't Blackstar release a new amp? Some new bass amps as well.
Yeah, Blackstar released some new bass amps. I don't know if I didn't get to try them. I didn't see them. We were meant to have a meeting with them.
I tell you what, I thought was really cool. I didn't spend a huge amount of time there. Obviously, I didn't plug it in, but that new orange Mastodon,
100%.
Yeah, the new Brent Hind's head, that could be up there. Loads of stuff, basically. Yeah. Loads and loads of good stuff. I'm sure.
Yeah, we're just sort of listing stuff now.
Well, it's the nice stuff that we saw. But throughout the year, I'm sure it will become clearer which one we like, and then by this Christmas next year we'll have a Gear of the Year for 2018. Seems a long way away, but it will come around very quickly.
Yeah,
hey, it's February already. How's that happened?
I know.
Madness.
I
know. True. Absolute madness.
I blame Joe.
Talk about things that are going too long. We should probably wrap up this show.
Did we even answer really? Half of these questions?
We got about halfway through. We're going to answer a ton more over in the Patreon episode. If you go a ton more. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. We're from as little as $1 a month. You can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. At $1 a month, you get the regular episode ad-free and early. At $5 a month, you get access to a ton of bonus content.
A ton.
An extra half an hour of content every week, plus access to the mini-series like Branton's Rant On and a load of exclusive interviews as well. And at the $10 tier, you become one of our executive backers, which means that Joe Branton has to read your name off
while gargling this bottle of wine.
Don't gargle the wine. That's going to be horrible. But you are going to still do it in one breath. Is your body still capable of that? Or is it
knackered
after? Okay, like these people have.
Emery, James Baker, Christopher Raptors, Zane Omar, Matt Moritz, Dave Lee, Derek Winsor, Martin Cliff, Matt Davis, Aaron Sherman, Blake Weiland, Jake Gray, Christopher Lucer, Juan Correa, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Nordwick, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Carlos Mancha, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Mark Cross, Brad Page, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie Anston, Jake Godfrey, Paul Corrigan, Matt Wine, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moon Graven, Colin Anderson, that's all of you. I could bring you out again if I wanted to, but you know what? I'm going to stop right here, because right now I'm feeling like I should probably drink a bit more wine, yes.
It's like Victor Meldrew rapping.
You went as red as a tomato.
The same colour as that Merlot you're drinking right now.
I don't know if anybody else saw, but on the Facebook group, somebody, I can't remember who it was, but somebody put a picture up of Joe with the quotes, "Give me your money, so I'll say your name."
Indeed, he will. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. If you want to join in the conversation around the show, best place to do that, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can also at us at Twitter and at Instagram.
Oh, Twitter.
Indeed.
Retro.
Indeed. And you can watch the videos and stuff that we get up to making at youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. Thanks very much for listening this week. Next week is the quiz.
Is it really?
It's the blimmin' quiz.
Quizageddon.
Good Lord.
Join us next week for some quizzing good fun. See you later.
Thanks, gang.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.